Welcome to Radical Love, a foster parenting podcast. I'm Corey Hazabeard, and sitting next to me, by my side, in love and in marriage and in podcast, is Megan Hazabeard. How are you?
Overall, I'm not great.
You're not great?
No.
So we kind of have found ourselves with some extra time to record an episode this week.
Yeah, as it turns out, we had planned to have a big meeting, a big important meeting regarding the kids and future plans, found out this morning that it was canceled, so we have an afternoon free.
So, like any good foster parents, we are getting stuff done?
Oh, well, I mean, we should be getting more stuff done, I guess. No, I just, yeah. I don't know, it took me a long time to recover over not being told we're not having a meeting that, you know, we've been expecting and waiting for.
So what about this meeting being canceled at the last second was so upsetting?
Well, there's, and anything that you deal with foster kids, meetings are never with a small number of people. It's always with a large number of people from all different agencies and different programs, which generally, I guess, is good, maybe, and helpful. But overall, in the way the system works, it's difficult to get things done. And so I've found that it's easier if I allow, like, you know, like if I take on the role of like, oh, meeting reminders because these are important. I understand it's my responsibility with just two kids is a lot easier than a lot of these people that have multiple kids under their.
Yeah, most people have at least 10 to 12 cases on their caseload. Our caseworkers have between 20 and 30 at any given moment in their caseloads. So, yeah, so we have found that it is much easier, especially you, because you're the organized one of the two of us to,
well, I just, to do all the reminders. Just want to, you know, too many times I've gotten, you know, we thought everybody was going to be at a meeting and then not everybody's there. And then later you get emails saying, oh, I had the date down wrong, or I had in my alarm under AM instead of PM or whatever. And so I just find it helpful to send out emails to everyone, reminding them of meetings a few days before, just making sure that like everybody knows that's on there, you know, kind of here's the expectations. I don't know. Was nobody else in Boy Scouts or whatever? Were they meeting?
Always be prepared.
Well, no, like Robert's Rules of Order.
Agendas.
Yeah.
Robert, I motion that we move on from this topic.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's one of those things. And then this morning, I got a text from one of our amazing workers just confirming that it was not happening. And this is a Monday. Let me just clarify. This is a Monday. I sent the email out Thursday night. And I was like, no, it's still happening. I don't know why you think it's not happening. It's definitely happening. And then I get like a screenshot sent of an email sent to like everyone in the team and even people I don't know.
Not almost everyone. Everyone and some
everyone
people we've
people
never
I've
met.
I've never seen their name on anything before. Clarifying that, nope, meeting's canceled. Stay tuned for details. So.
And it was sent at 3 o'clock on a Friday.
Yes.
So what did you had already done today?
Well, I took the day off work, as I do for meetings with the kids. But with foster kids, one of the hardest things, and I don't want to say this to discourage people, but it is complicated to have a job and be at every meeting. And I certainly haven't been at every meeting. You or I have always managed to make it, which is a huge blessing, but I struggle when I don't make it to the meeting because your explanation of what happened is always like, you know, not as enough as you get when you're actually in the meeting. So
we have learned that our roles are varied. Like I'm really good in the meeting and can help and dissect things in the meeting.
And we can communicate when for the other pretty well. You know, we balance each other out and, you know, interpreting what, especially in important things that need to get across, especially when they can be really emotional for us. You know, the other one can always step in and say, well, what they're trying to say is this. So it's better if we both go. And that is probably one of the hardest parts. And probably, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if people don't expect us at the meet. I don't know. I don't know why we're the last, like, consulted. We give the most flexible schedules, you know. Every lawyer, every person is given, you know, what, like, you know, the option of what works for them. And usually we're told it's when it is. We're rarely asked what works for us, which is fine. I will be the flexible of the schedule one. I can do that. But it's just so frustrating then to get this screenshot of an email today that was sent out. And when, you know, when you talk to the people that's, you know, sent the email and that canceled it, and I try and understand, like, well, now why is everybody I know and people I don't know CC'd on this email? And yet, you know, Corey nor I were given this information. Then it comes down to, well, we didn't have a release for you, which, yeah, okay. I mean, I understand that in principle of what they're doing, but it definitely feels like, you know, and when then we're told, oh, we'll forward you the whole chain. So there's nothing on there we can't see. And they've been given a verbal release for other paperwork that I've been handed by people, like the same people that sent the cancellation email, handed, you know, other paperwork, and they just got a verbal confirmation of what I, you know, like what we can have. So is it the fact that, like, that, the rule is, oh, you have to have a release to send an email for someone, which I just, okay, everybody else gets it, fine, gets sent the email because of their job title, fine. But then, like, we who are trying to do what's best for the kids, you know, like, I don't know. It just seems like, okay, I understand the importance of the rule, but is not following that rule, what, don't you think that would be, in this instance, what's more ideal for the kids? And then just finding out so last minute that what we considered an important email or important meeting isn't going to take place today. That's just hard.
I definitely agree. It's upsetting. It's weird being on the front line and in the trenches with these kids on a day in and day out basis, coaching them in sports, providing for them with meals and taking care of them and helping them with homework and taking them to and from the different things they have to be at and pouring our life and love into these kids. It seems like we're the ones that are so often afforded the least amount of say or least amount of time to be given a voice for them, or our opinion is less considered than anybody else because we're not experts, obviously. But
the other case that's upsetting is a lot of these items that were going to be discussed in the meeting are time sensitive.
That's the big thing, is that these are
the time sensitive element, and that, like, it makes no difference to everyone else out apart from, you know, these boys that it gets pushed off. Like, let's say it's a week and there's no way it's happening next week. So let's say it gets pushed off a week. That doesn't even matter to any of these other people, which, and again, then when you need so many people in the room in a meeting, then what happens is you have to schedule so far out in advance so that everybody's schedule is quote unquote clear. Not to mention there will be, you know, there are always someone who calls, oh, but something else came up that I have to do. So to be put off that way when, you know, that's just another meeting in your day at your job as a therapist or a counselor or a caseworker is nothing. But when it's, you know, all that time adds up for these kids.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this meeting was already pushed back 2 to 3 weeks to afford an available schedule for a handful of people that day. And then for it to be at least pushed back another week, if not 6 weeks, is extremely upsetting and frustrating.
And And I don't know. I it's so emotional for me about it. And, but I don't know if I'm just coming across as an insane person.
Always.
Because that's how these people are. But like, these are my children you're messing with. And, you know, we work certainly with a lot of females and mothers too. And I just want to say, like, but if this was your kid, would you allow this? Would you allow this to happen to your kid? It's just hard. So I'm in a real weird mood about it. So that's why we have some time to record this, which I originally didn't want to because I didn't think I could.
So last week you were brain dead because of coming straight from work, and today you're the walking wounded.
Yeah.
So let's just transition.
Sure, segue
let's,
that.
Let's just hit a pause on grief. And
just push it deep, deep down inside.
Yeah, and let it explode. And when our marriage ends in, you know, 5-6 years, we'll be good to go. Okay. So you had an interesting week before today.
Oh, yeah.
Some would even say fun. So what are some things that happened to you this last week?
Yeah, the previous week, I actually, for those of you who like talking in your ears,
in one's own ear or to somebody else's ear?
Yeah, no, in one's own ear. And listen to NPR. There's a little known game show on there, Ask Me Another, which is super fun to play along and listen to.
When you say little known game show, it's in the top 10 on all podcasts.
Oh,
right,
I didn't
now
know that.
I
Who looked, knew?
I checked.
Who knew? Well, it's little. Whenever I asked people about it, nobody. I'm pulling the wrong people, but
it's not Says You or Tell Me Another, whatever it is.
Yeah, Tell Me Another. That's the one.
Is that one?
I think you're thinking Ask Me Another.
Oh, now it makes more sense.
Or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And what's the other one? There's three.
Says You and Ask Me Another.
Ah, yeah. There's one of them I like. There's one of the three that I actually like listening to. The other two I don't like. But so, sorry, you went to this thing.
Oh, so yeah. So, which is super fun. And we did, whenever we have sports on the weekends, we find that putting that on the radio and listening and answering along as a family is quite fun. And not to mention, like, you feel pretty smart, you know, when you're able to answer the questions. So they were coming to my town. So I applied to get on and took this rapid fire test, which I was like, woo, you know, tests.
I came home and she's like, I can't talk. I'm taking a test.
It was just intense. And so I left that test and apparently I did well enough to be considered for an interview for a contestant position. So like they didn't tell, I wanted to know like my score on the test. I never found out. Like I have no idea. Like maybe that test was completely nothing. Maybe, yeah. Maybe my answers to that had no, but it was encouraging. And then I got on as an alternate contestant. So no, this is not me revealing that I was will be on the game show, but I got to be an alternate and got to go and see and my plus one, which I graciously took. I had a lot of people.
He was very handsome. Very
had a lot
stunning
of people wanting that plus one ticket, but I took my gorgeous husband. Corey has a beard. And so we went and I didn't have to be on the game show because they didn't need an alternate. So we got front row tickets, got to see the workings of how it was made. And but which was good because then when I was sitting there and just the nervousness, you know, it's one thing to like shout the answers to your radio, but it was quite a large crowd. And like I just blanked on every answer. Like it was the best of both worlds. Like I got picked to be a contestant and yet I didn't have to show that I don't know anything.
Yeah, you were very thrilled.
So it worked out. It was a good date night.
Who were the guests on the episode that you were on?
Ooh, Martina McBride and Connie Britton, it was just amazing. I could just be in Connie Britton's presence and be happy. And again, free front row tickets.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I'm a big fan of free. So.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Free, and I didn't end up looking like an idiot, so bonus.
You did a good job. I'm very proud of you. So what you did some other stuff. I had to go out of town this weekend.
Yeah.
So you were responsible. You were
single parented all weekend.
You were responsible for cooking, which is
not my strong suit.
Yeah, I let you finish that sentence.
Yeah, thank you. No, I did, and we didn't go out to eat at all.
I'm proud of you.
I know.
Now, did you have a loving husband consider all of your?
You asked what I would be able to prepare. Unfortunately, I have children, and I can prepare children's meals. I would not be able to put together any sort of Thanksgiving or adult style meal, as I never have. Because you were gone, took the kids to the African American Street Festival, which it was the 34th annual. So,
oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, been going on longer than I was alive. So there's that. It's just a bit of information, but yeah. So it was really cool. It was in a park in North Nashville, and we went, and it was just a really great celebration time. The weather was great for like the first time in a while. We missed the rain parts, so that was good. We got to listen to some incredible live music, performance, art, dancing, slam poetry. And there was a lot of incredible vendors with some handmade Afrocentric items, which were pretty awesome and very inspiring, and important for the kids to see and understand and vibe with.
Mm-hmm. Our kids were very excited when I came home from my trip. One of our sons went to his room and grabbed a dashiki that he got and put it on with his hood and everything. It was really cool. He was very, very proud of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun to see.
Yeah. Well, right. And yes, fortunately, we managed to not send a ton of money. They were all for getting all sorts of jewelry. And, we pretty much could have bought everybody's Christmas presents there. They were super excited.
Oh, that would have been fun. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I really wish I could have gone to that.
Yeah.
And that would have been a blast.
It was really cool.
And did they dance any or anything like that while they were there?
No, I couldn't convince them to. they had that look like, I want to, but I don't want to make a fool of myself. So.
That's how I felt every time I tried to get into double dutch. Like, I want to double dutch, but I don't want to trip over and make a fool of myself.
I'm not sure you know what double dutch is.
That's jump rope, right?
Yes, with the two.
I didn't think double dutch is when.
But you grew up in Texas, so I don't know what.
I didn't think double dutch is going on two blind dates and making the other one pay for it.
Right.
On a much sadder note, since the recording of our last episode, which was about Black Lives Matter and Colin Kaepernick, Tyree King was killed. He was a 13-year-old boy in Columbus, Ohio. And Terrence Crutcher was killed in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And both of them were shot and killed by police officers. And then Sandra Bland's family settled for a wrongful death suit for $1.9 million. We had a lot of discussions with our family about this, but just before we started recording this episode, the Columbus, Ohio medical examiner released an autopsy statement about Tyree King and how he was running away and was shot while running away, and how deeply unsettling that is, and then how Terrence Crutcher was killed apparently while his car was stalled out on a road, and there was no known reason for him to be shot and killed either. He was unarmed as well. I was so moved by an article that I saw. There is a person named Kelly Greenzales on Facebook, and this person claims to be a teacher for Tyree King. And I just thought it was very moving, and so I want to read that real quick. Last school year, during my service with City Year, I had the privilege of getting to know 13-year-old Tyree King. I ate lunch with him and would help him with his English work almost every day. We would read books like The Outsiders and The Giver. to each other in funny voices in one-on-one tutoring sessions. Sometimes he'd sneak my phone and take funny selfies with the Snapchat filters on. Tyree was barely over 5 feet tall, but had the biggest contagious smile and great dance moves. He'd often volunteer to read out loud and would make up raps about vocabulary words. I remember one time there was a new girl in class that was a little different than everyone else. She was being made fun of by some of the boys. Tyree intervened and told her to come sit with him and his friends to make her feel included. He was very smart and a very good kid with many friends. His dad would come to school once a quarter and come to his classes to make sure he was doing well and making good grades. Last night, around 8 p.m., my funny and bright student Tyree was murdered by the police. I encourage you to look up the reports, but in short, he was shot multiple times while carrying a toy BB gun. Whether or not the police had the right to shoot, no child should have to die this way. I'm really struggling with how to respond to this event. I haven't usually been vocal about these issues, but now that it has become personal, I cannot stay silent. If this same situation had happened to a white kid in a suburb, they would almost certainly still be alive. I urge you all in the words of author and lawyer Brian Stevenson, to get proximate, to get people and communities affected by injustice. Take a stand for young black lives and get to know people outside of your own communities. You can't understand most of the important things from a distance. You have to get close. We need to do more to keep our children safe, and not just white children. We all need to reach out and band together. Racism in America is systemic, and we all must do something and fight to really create change so all children are protected and treated equal. Remember Tyree King. Speak his name and tell his story. We lost a precious and powerful life this week, and I will miss him dearly. Praying for Tyree's loved ones, Columbus, and the police. And it ends with, Black Lives Matter, Tyree King's life matters. And it has a photo of him. Tyree King's story just reminds me so clearly of our own children. Our 14-year-old, he sounds very similar to our 14-year-old. And when we met him, he was 12. And it's just almost identical. And when they first moved into our house, they both told stories about how they had to carry BB guns or knives in their pockets, like Swiss Army knife kind of knives, and just to stay safe in their neighborhood and to feel safe so they wouldn't be robbed, and how at any moment this story could have been about one of our two kids. And it's just so absolutely unsettling, knowing the stories that they tell and how similar it is to what happened to Tyree. That's the first time you've heard that letter.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think about that letter? And
I mean, I can totally agree on how, like, you just don't think that it affects you. And then, you know, for it to lose someone you love, to be the realization that it affects you, it affects everyone. And, you know, her encouragement to make it personal, I think that's what it is. You have to make this personal. Maybe it doesn't, you know, these black men and women that are getting shot, maybe they don't look like you, maybe they don't live like you or whatever, but whatever you think the difference is, it's so just the color of the skin of your skin. That's the only difference. And you have to make this personal, because it is personal.
Yeah. We just have to simply see each other as real human beings and not blaming the victim constantly. I mean, the news story is as soon as, you know, it comes out that Tyree King was shot and killed, it was because he had a BB gun on him. And I mean, there's no excuse. And now when
you can go on YouTube and find videos of white, you know, boys and men getting, you know, disarmed by the police and taken down while holding an actual gun, you know.
Oh, there's multiple videos of white people shooting at cops and them using non-lethal means to take down the person still. I mean, you can see it constantly. I mean, in the case of Terrence Crutcher, he gets tased and shot multiple times. He was tased and shot. Tased and shot. And it's so crazy. I mean, I remember watching a video a year or so ago of a black man getting pulled over at a gas station. He had no idea that he was being pulled over. I had this happen to me, and the two of us once got pulled over, and we had no idea we were being pulled over, and we got out of the car not thinking at all, not knowing that we'd been pulled over. And the same thing happened to this guy, and he was just going inside to buy like a soda or something at a gas station, and the police officer, you know, screaming at him with a gun pointed at him and says, "Hey, why don't you, or put your hands up," and then the cop asks for his wallet. And so the guy turns around, reaches to get his wallet out of the car, and he says, "Hey, I'm just getting my wallet out of the car." And he gets shot 3 or 4 times. He ended up living, but it was completely crazy. And that's, I mean, with Terrence Crutcher, I mean, he was tased and shot. I mean, he was immobilized with non-lethal means and then shot. It doesn't make any sense. And I know that there are documentaries now talking about how tasing is lethal and dangerous and things like that. But at the very least, an escalation of force to be tased then shot, or tased then shot at the same time, is by no means the correct steps of escalation from how I understand things. And it's just so heartbreaking. I mean, both of these men, or I'm sorry, the 13-year-old boy and a man who was coming home from a college night class were executed for being guilty of being black. And all these things are just simple things where I've had them happen in my own life. My car has broken down in the middle of a road at one point, and I was struggling to get it out of the road, you know, by myself. And I mean, you and I have had, we've been pulled over when we didn't know it and got out of the car and had a gun drawn on us. I mean,
yeah, and statistically, you know, our youngest is 10, and that society sees, you know, from about the age of 10, for black children, they assume they're teenagers. They look older for some reason, when like white children at 10 still look like, you know, younger adolescents. And yet, you know, a black child at 10 is assumed to be a teenager and then aggressive and male and angry. So I don't know. It's so scary. And there's just the feeling of helplessness until, you know, everyone understands that, you know, Black Lives Matter, and you have to make it personal. But I don't even know what else to say about the topic, because you and I are not the ones to speak to it.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And by no means are we the voice for people of color at all, but we're saying this as two white people that are encountering this and are most likely talking to other white people through this podcast, that this is something that we all need to think about and that we all need to consider. I would encourage you to seek out voices of people of color that are authorities on these subjects, but we at least want to shed light on it.
Yeah, and let's clarify, maybe don't gang up on like the one black person you work with. And I don't think they want that, for you to ask all your questions about that. But I just, you know, you have to open your eyes to what's going on and not make excuses for police that are outright killing children for no reason other than for being black.
Yeah, and we just by bringing up Tyree King and Terrence Crutcher, we really want as many people as possible to know their story, to know their names, and to spread the reality and the loss of humanity that has been taken from our world in these two people, that by no means necessary was this right. And so, and once again, we had to have another conversation with our kids about what is happening in this world. And while having the conversation this weekend, you know, we were discussing Tyree King and Terrence Crutcher with them, and they, you know, had talked about Eric Garner and Mike Brown, and they were able to make the connections, but somehow in the scheme of things, we had never, or they didn't remember us talking about Sandra Bland and her family settling for almost $2 million for a wrongful death suit. And we talked about how that's not justice and how getting money after your family member's been killed or murdered or having wrongful death does not replace that person and is not justice at all. And we were talking about how Sandra Bland was in prison and died, and that there are differing accounts, and even recently that there was a police officer that came out and said that she may have been murdered at one point, and he was kicked off the force for saying that. And I mean, that's all conjecture and hasn't been proven by any means, but I mean, that happened in the last year or so. And we were talking about that with our sons, and they brought up Fannie Lou Hamer and how she was arrested and thrown in jail, and how she was beat up by other inmates, by police officers ordered these inmates to beat her until she was unconscious.
What year was that?
1962, I believe.
Yeah.
She was fighting for voting rights and was trying to sign up or have other people signed up and helping people take the literacy tests and all those things that she was trying to help people overcome those things. And LBJ, President Johnson, I just watched this documentary about this because I was so fascinated when my kids brought it up, because I honestly didn't know this story. And I was looking up Fannie Lou Hamer and how she was testifying before a committee in Congress, and she was following Martin Luther King Jr. and how they televised it nationwide. And LBJ did not want Fannie Lou Hamer's testimony to be aired on national television. LBJ, when she walked out and sat down in front of the committee, he had a press conference, a live press conference, and all he said was that this is the 9-month anniversary of the death of John F. Kennedy. And he drug it out.
No, so what you're not explaining is, so what LBJ did at that time, at the time she went to go sit down to testify, he went ahead and created his own distraction and held a press conference. Sorry, I have to explain. We're speaking married lingo here, and I felt like that story wasn't clear. So that he created basically a diversion and held a press conference, say, you know, and didn't tell anybody what it was about. So then, you know, when the president calls a press conference, you can imagine it's big news and draws everybody's attention.
Yeah, they had talked about how the news was thinking that it might be him announcing his vice president candidate or something like that. And it ended up him just saying, this is the 9-month anniversary of the death of John F. Kennedy. And then as soon as she was done, it cut right back to the committee meeting of her walking out. It's crazy. And I mean, it's been happening since.
Well, and that just goes to show the importance of spreading light, you know, like this darkness and what people are concealing, like things done in the dark need to be brought to the light. And there are cover-ups happening. There are things happening that need to have light shed on them. And that's the only way, and people knowing about it and paying attention and being angry about it. That's when something will change.
I listened to several of her speeches, and she even has some gospel songs that are just breathtaking. And, so yeah, highly suggest looking up Fannie Lou Hamer and some of her speeches and some of her songs. They're beautiful and just they are very relevant for today. So we, like I said, we are not experts in the Black experience, but we're just trying to bring light to the conversation and bring it to a place that maybe aren't constantly had. And we also want you to we want to encourage you to have these kind of conversations with your own kids as foster parents, but also challenge you to continue to seek out voices of color in helping you raise your children, white or Black, all in all races. Like the diversity of opinion and voices is only beneficial to you and your family.
Certainly, yeah.
So what is making you a better foster parent?
Me right now, picked up this little book called The Feminist Fight Club, which is pretty great.
Are there any rules to Feminist Fight Club?
Yes. Talk about The Feminist Fight Club. We'll get it together over there.
That is really funny. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you weren't prepared for that.
Let's make potpourri.
So, Corey.
Whoa. What's why?
Wait, what?
What and why? Like, why? Not what. We already know the what, but The Feminist Fight Club. What is it about? You just mentioned the name to me at one point. I still
I know,
don't know what it's about.
I just started it. I didn't finish it. Maybe I should have saved it for when I finish.
Is it fiction? Is it an educational book?
Is it fiction to you?
Feminist Fight Club? Yeah, it must be fiction.
Yeah. No, it's just... oh, man. You know, it's just a funny read and take on, you know, what women can be doing to be, you know, it's funny because I'm reading it and thinking like, oh man, you know, all the men need to read this too, but it's like, there's you as a straight white male can't identify with all the struggles out there. And so it's just like, you know, especially I'm working in an office place and, you know, I've definitely had those jobs where, you know, you get assumed that you're the one to make the coffee or that you're the note taker of the meeting because and just all those things that like that happen on a daily basis that isn't, it's what's interesting is because maybe people are thinking like the overt sexism that happened, you know, in the not too distant past of like,
Mad
you know,
Men style.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe pinching the girl at the office or whatever, but like there's so much, you know, mansplaining. I know you know that one. And
I do know that
man-terruption and all those things that happen just and you know, it happens to us all the time and as far as like getting talked over, all those things.
Whoa.
Yeah, you've never been accused of talking over someone, huh? So just all those things of what you know, and sometimes it's like, you know, women were raised to be quiet and homemakers and love the children and stay at home. And that's not everybody's path. If that's your path, great. But that's not everybody's path. And we're still making less than men. So all these things need to get corrected. So there's a lot of things I'm over here fighting for. So, Corey, what's making you a better foster parent?
So there's this band. And it's, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but I think it's Touche Amore is how you pronounce it, I think. And it is this post-hardcore, screamy, metal, punk rock thing. And the whole album is called, what is it called? I can't even remember what it's called now. But their last album was about, it's called Still Exists or It Exists. And it was all about existential crisis and what it means to be alive in this world today. But their new album is all about learning to live in grief and how to...
Sounds like your life.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's written for me. But it's so powerful and how to move forward through grief, how to not live in regret when you lose a loved one and... it's an emotional catharsis for people that are in grief or have lost a loved one.
Well, that's perfect for this emotional cathartic episode.
Yeah, I'll see if I can tack one on to the end of this podcast. So Touche Amore and you, the Feminist Fight Club. Who's that by? Do you know? Look it up, people.
Not off the top of my head. Not great with names.
Neither am I. All right. Thank you for joining us today. This has been Radical Love, where we say radical love demands radical actions.
Nothing you say.